Hey, it's Russell Peters. On this episode of Culturally Canceled, we have martial art greatness in the room. We have a guy who started me back into jiu-jitsu, Higan Machado. And I now train with his brother, Jean-Jacques Machado. But Higan Machado was a force to be reckoned with. In the Brazilian jiu-jitsu world, he is a very legendary man. At the age of 18, he fought his cousin, Hickson Gracie, and he gave him a hard time. And that's not something that you can take lightly. Hickson Gracie is known as the best jiu-jitsu man ever. And we have the legendary actor, martial artist, producer, writer, director, my good friend, and great-grandfather, Michael Jai White, is with us on this episode. We talk about everything from him training with John Jones to making Black Dynamite to the outlaw Johnny Black, which, in fact, Higan Machado and I are both in. So please enjoy this episode. If you're into the arts of any kind, you're going to dig it. Even if you're not into the arts, check it out. If you get bored, turn it off. It's not my fault. Hey, welcome to Culturally Canceled. It's my show. It's Russell Peters. I have with me today two martial arts legends. We have Michael Jai White, as you may know, from his movie world career and his actual martial arts career. And we have the legendary jiu-jitsu maestro, Higan Machado. What's up, Higan?
What's up, my brother? What a pleasure.
Booha!
And we have Mike. Mike, what, didn't you train under Higan for a minute?
Yes, of course. Of course. Only the best.
Did you rolled with him? Did he do his pressure shit on you?
Well, he didn't kill me.
Listen, first of all, when I roll with him, he doesn't even use a fucking, like, he doesn't use like the basic techniques when, just for a little history in case anybody's wondering, I train with Higan's brother, Jean-Jacques, and I also train with Higan. I've been fortunate enough to train with a lot of the best guys out there. Higan, Jean-Jacques, Half, Henzo,
Caesar.
Hickson, I got to do a seminar with, Braulio Estima. Lots of Nick Gregoriadis. You know what your name is, Nick. And so I've been a very, very lucky guy. And I think that's something that being in the entertainment business has afforded me, is getting to train with the best of the best. Now, Michael and I have never trained together, but I think that's because he's afraid of me. But that's neither here nor there. We'll just be friends instead.
Yeah, yeah. Keep it where it is. I'm good with it.
Higan Machado.
I have a story for Michael Jai White. I remember I was in Brazil, like in Oi City with my uncle Carlos Gracie. I have a couple of his kids. We were watching a movie. But the movie we watched was your movie.
Oh,
what movie is that?
Which one? It
was Spawn.
Oh, Spawn.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I remember.
Oh, you went to go visit at that point?
No, this in Brazil.
Yeah, because the movie came out in 98.
97. Yeah, I remember Carlos Grace talking about, oh, they're going to burn his face. He got his face burning and stuff. I remember watching with Carlos Grace, Helium, and the daughter, Killer Grace, watch your movie with Comet. About Carlos Grace knew all the scene. Probably he watched a couple times.
Wow, really?
Yeah,
he's
funny. I remember because the Carlos Grace got very old. He lived in my house at the time. I went to visit my mother in Brazil. I brought like some American guys at the time to visit him, but his memories was not very sharp. Right. He watched a lot of TV. Yeah, I remember they showing your movie like on the evening. And Carlos was watching the movie, comment about the movie.
Wow.
I remember like, man, that was Michael Jai White movie.
Wow, that's like,
that was amazing.
That's wild, right? You don't realize, I don't think you realize the reach you have until somebody else from a completely another world tells you.
I'm always blown away by that. It wouldn't even register that person would know anything about me. That happened to me so many times. I remember a long time ago, I was at Justin's, you know.
In New York or Atlanta?
In New York. It just had opened.
That was Puffy's restaurant, in case anybody's wondering.
Yeah. It was a bunch of folks in there. And next thing I know, I see Dr. J, you know, one of the greatest basketball players. I mean, Dr. J is walking through the crowd, and I was like, oh man, that's Dr. J. And I was like, let me get out of his way. And every time, everywhere I moved, I seemed like I was still in his damn way. And I was like, shit, how am I still in his way? I'm trying to get out of his way. And he was coming to talk to me. And he goes, hey man, and, you know, I want to say I'm a fan. I've seen, I was like, you're not supposed to be able to see me. Like, how do you know that I exist? It freaked me out. I'm like, but then I'm like, wait a minute. Dr. J watch me in a movie?
What year was this?
I don't know.
Like late 90s, I would imagine.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm like, it freaked me out. It's still, that still happens. Like, that still happens where I go, you know, I saw the Whispers going into the, you know, you know, they were going to perform. And I'm like, here's the Whispers. And they
the
go,
twins,
hey,
right?
Yeah. Hey, Mike. I'm like, what? How the hell do you know me? I grow up with these, like, looking at these people as bigger than life, and I'm like, but they can see me back?
Yeah, yeah, the same
freaks
shit.
Freaks me out.
I was getting on a flight once, and I saw the twins from the Whispers.
Yeah.
And because I'm at the airport. I'm at the airport. I can't process it quick enough. I go, I know them. Where the hell do I know them from? I go, hey, I know your face. And he goes, we're in a band. I go, what band? He goes, it's probably a band you had never heard of. Mm. And I'm like, because they just looked at me as some Indian guy. Like, yeah. And I go, well, what's the name of the band? He goes, The Whispers. I go, are you fucking kidding me? I pull out my iPod. I show them all my Whispers songs. I go, yeah, I never heard of you.
Yeah.
I'm like, you're crazy?
Yeah,
you're The Whispers.
That happened with me with Russell Hitchcock from Air Supply.
Oh, right. I was
like, yeah. Like, I'm like, I know all your, you know, on a plane. It's like, no, I know all that stuff. But incidentally, that was kind of funny when Russell and I reconnected. It was kind of like that because I, you know, I didn't know I knew him from like decades ago.
Yeah.
And then you tell the story much better than me.
So I'm at the Comedy Store. This is about 11 years ago now, actually. I do a show. I'm hanging out. Michael comes up to me, goes, hey man, I'm a big fan. Can I take a picture with you? I look at him like, I go, man, get the fuck out of here. He's like, what? I go, what do you mean you're a big fan? He goes, I'm a big fan. I love your stuff. I go, are you kidding me? He goes, what? I go, Mike, we met before. Where? I go, we hung out for like 2 days straight in Toronto. What do you mean? I go, I think you were promoting Tyson.
No. I was down there shooting that damn Seagal movie.
Okay, yeah, yeah. The Seagal movie. I know the one you're talking about.
Yeah, the Exit Wounds.
Right.
But I was hanging out with this guy and a friend of ours named Drew, right? And so we were hanging out. We were like kicking it and whatever. And I just remembered, like, you know, I was hanging back with Drew and this other guy.
Yeah, he goes, yeah, I was with you 2 days. I went to the radio station with you while you were doing interviews, and they put me on with you because they knew me there. And he's like, no, I was with this guy, Drew, and the other guy. Some other guy. I go, yeah, I'm the fucking other guy.
So I had no idea that was him all that.
And that was like 2000.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm like, you know, because I'd been listening to his tapes. And I'm like, hey, man, you know, I've been following you and whatever. And he's like, Mike. I'm like, what?
I remember back then, too, you were talking about fighting and stuff. And you were talking about, I was asking you about Tyson and stuff and the movie because you had done. When was Tyson the movie done?
95.
Wow, okay.
Oh, 94.
Was HBO, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was like, weren't you too big to be playing Mike Tyson?
I was taller. I mean, you know, yeah. The thing is, I made sure that the fighter people I fought was taller and thinner.
Right.
So I looked shorter and stockier. More stocky.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you get diesel for that? I mean, you were already in shape all the time, but did you get wider for that?
Well, I did like the opposite of the cut diet.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the time, Mike was not that lean.
He was pudgy Mike then.
Right. So I had to get that look. So that means I had to really gain weight to fill out.
Right.
And so I was basically eating cheesecake and drinking Gatorades like crazy.
So that's what I'm doing wrong.
Yeah. Well, you know, because I was leaner and I had to puff up, you know. Of course, when Mike came out, he was lean, you know.
Incredibly lean.
Yeah, he was shredded when he came out.
That was the most shredded I'd ever seen Mike in my life. And that was the meanest he had looked. Remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
Peter McNeely, woo.
Yep.
I took Hegan to meet Mike a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
He's a cool guy, man. What a nice guy.
I said, Mike, this is Hegan Machado. he's basically the Mike Tyson of the jiu-jitsu world. And Mike just looked at him. Uh-huh. Like, I was like, oh, shit. Yeah. I go, Hegan, don't choke out Mike. It'll be really fucked up. But you don't want to get hit by him, so you're going to have to choke him out.
No, he's an amazing guy.
Yeah.
What's your relationship with Mike? Have one?
No. Mm-mm. I mean, we met several times. After the movie. Well, we talked after the movie.
You're Fort Greene, right? You were Fort Greene?
No, East New York.
East New York. Oh, that's right by him. He's Brownsville.
Yeah. Right? So, you know, one of my best friends, Frankie Lyles, he was super middleweight champ.
I remember Frankie Lyles.
Yeah. So he put Mike and I in touch when Mike was incarcerated, and we talked about
Frankie Lyles was a really good fighter.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, there were times where Frankie and I set up the whole thing with Mike and Bob Sapp, because I was training Bob Sapp.
Bob Sapp, that poor guy, what a big diesel guy.
Yeah.
With no chin at all.
Oh, he actually it's a weird thing.
Is it like the goats that you can scare?
No. I'm saying there's times where if Bob wanted to really make fighting his main thing, it's frightening, because
he's a wall of a human.
He would not. That guy would warm up with 400 pounds bench pressing. He was unusually strong, and he was pretty damn fast for his size. So we would work with him, and then we get him doing things right. It was frightening. Just the thing that people didn't know is Bob's managers, the Ishii and all those, they had him representing 20 different products. The guy was constantly just, you know, he was the dancing panda. He was doing this commercial. He had no time to train. Right.
And
every time that you saw him fight,
right,
it was like he had no preparation.
3-week training camp.
Not even.
Wow.
Not even. They were just making money off of this dude. I'm like, I used to tell him, like, Bob, will you explain, just so people are not pissed off at you, that everybody, you're fighting people who all they do is fight. And you're, you know, even to try to get him to train for 2 weeks was very difficult.
And that wasn't him. That was his people.
It was impossible to do anything else. But I tell you something, those rare times where he had like a month off and we trained, that's when he fought people like Musashi. That's when he fought people like...
Did he beat Musashi?
Yeah. That's when he fought Ernesto Hoost, which I thought he was going to kill him.
Ernesto was going to kill him?
Well,
Ernesto was a beast.
Yeah, but Bob won twice.
Yeah. Yeah, but Ernesto was the first, what's his name, who's still fighting in the UFC, a Dutch guy as well. You know who I'm talking about.
The big dude?
Yeah, heavyweight guy.
Yeah.
I'm friends with him too. That's even worse.
Yeah, that's
Eddie, what's
that's
his name?
How you treat your friends.
Overeem, yeah. Look at that. Yeah, Overeem. I always used to get Ernesto and Overeem mixed up with each other because they looked similar.
No, they looked nothing. That's the...
You know what it was? They both had greasy Jericho.
Can somebody pop up two pictures of these people? come on. Overeem and...
I think it just had weird names is what it was.
No. Oh, Overeem looks like his brother.
Eddie, get the gloves. I'm fighting Mike after this.
He had a younger brother, Undereem, that he fought just... I mean, he looked very similar. No, Valentine or something like that.
Oh, I thought you meant there was a guy named Undereem.
He was
Overeem's younger brother, Undereem.
Yeah, but where the hell were we a second ago?
Ernesto.
Yeah, but
fighting Bob.
Yeah, but you know, like, think about Bob fought Ernesto. He fought the twin, Nogueira.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Yeah. Now
Minotaur.
That's when Bob was training a bit and had no skills. So if he later on, when he developed skills, and if he would have just trained, it would have been kind of crazy. But anyway, we were behind, Frank and I were behind that whole thing with Bob and Mike Tyson. When Mike Tyson comes to the ring.
That was supposed to, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, when he called Mike a bitch or something.
My job was telling the security people that this is kind of planned, and let Mike get up in the ring. And Frankie was, you know, we're like right in the background if you ever want to look at that.
I'm going to watch that again.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, Bob was like, Mike's a pussy or a bitch. He's calling him something. I was like, what
I don't think he said that. But
he said something, or he's a punk. He just, But you could see he was smiling when he said it because it was like he didn't want to do it.
I know Bob. He doesn't swear. Bob is really unique. I've never heard that guy swear.
He's got traps the size of most guys' biceps.
Mm.
He was a big dude.
That dude.
Did he start off as a football player?
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, we did Blood and Bone together, right? I did the fight scene with him. I remember one time I told him, don't hold back. I want you to throw that punch as fast as you can. I'm just going to move. Don't worry. My head's not going to be there. One of the times where I had like a brain fart and I wasn't quite sure of the choreography because I was like doing too much. And I'm like, I go somewhere else for a second. I'm like, oh shit, Bob's about to punch at you. And I just move. And I duck and his hand just, I heard the wind just go poof, just right over my head. And I was like, cut. Let's stop right now. I could have died just now.
Yeah.
You know? But that dude was unusually.
Where does he live?
Yeah, Seattle. But Seattle.
He was like
a lot of times Japan.
I was gonna say he was a big superstar in Japan.
We couldn't be anywhere for over 20 minutes in Japan because he would be mobbed. If we're anywhere for over 20 minutes, forget it. We can't get to the car because it looks like a Godzilla movie.
Well, he was the size of Godzilla. Yeah. In all fairness.
Yeah.
You never fought in any of the MMA competitions?
I did some Vale Tudo on the past. I did maybe close to 9 fights.
How'd you do?
I won the fight.
All 9?
All 9.
Why don't you sit here and brag with me, Higgin Machado? Jean-Jacques fought, right?
Jean-Jacques did the fight. I remember you stopped
when he fought Frank Trigg, right?
And because he got a cut, it didn't stop the blood.
And Jean-Jacques was still mad about that to this day. He goes, that's the last time I ever asked my brothers to be in the corner. They see a little blood and they fucking panic.
I said, no.
I saw the fight. It's funny because I'm friends with Frank Trigg. And the first time I met him, I go, hey, man, you kicked my teacher in the head. And he goes, who's your teacher? I go, Jean-Jacques. He goes, ha-ha, great guy. Mm. I didn't know Frank Trigg was half black. Did you know that?
That makes sense. Now I'll tell you, like, you know, Frank is in my wife's movie.
Oh, really?
She kicks him in the head in the movie. And she always says, is that guy, isn't he seems black to me. Like, I was like, I don't know.
Yeah, he's half black. I didn't know.
I thought he was a dark Italian or something.
That's what I thought he was one of those too.
Yeah, so that, thank you. Like, that makes sense.
When he told me, I go, no. He goes, what the fuck you mean, no? I go, I didn't know. He goes, how'd you not know? I go, your dick's in your pants, first of all. I'm not going to fucking, you know.
Well, it's usually when somebody's half black.
There's a tell.
There's a little bit more, yeah. They look a little more on the black side.
Yeah, he was more Vin Diesel-y in the black way. Yes, you know what I mean? Like, they were very similar. Like, isn't he, you know?
Yeah.
What's Vin Diesel's real name? Eddie, Google Vin Diesel's real name. It's not even Vin Diesel.
Mark Vincent.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Are you friends with Vin? You're friends with Vin.
No, not at all. I just have a penchant for like...
What is it, Eddie? Mark St. Clair. Oh, Mark St. Clair. I'm afraid
you... No, Vincent's in there somewhere, I believe.
Maybe it's Mark Vincent St. Clair.
Well, yeah, so, but it's... because I know I have friends who were New York doormen with him.
Right.
So, and it makes sense that if his name is Mark Vincent, you know...
Vin Diesel makes sense, yeah.
There's where the Vin comes.
You trained him how long?
No, I met him briefly. The first time I met him, I was friend of Paul Walker.
Right.
And Paul Walker invited me to go to Puerto Rico. They were, I think, was Fast and Furious 5. Vin Diesel, his best friend is a guy named Valentino.
Mm-hmm.
Valentino introduced me to Vin Diesel. We hang out a little bit in Puerto Rico. And he called me to some TV show he was doing. I stopped by after this. He called me back for Fast and Furious 7 to help him to do a fight in grappling between he and Jason Statham. That's when I met the first time Jason Statham. And after this, he invited me for some events, some parties. But we never
actually
have a chance to hang out. Well, I trained him maybe a couple times, but not like you. You
know? Paul Walker trained with you too?
Paul Walker trained for me for every chance he come to see his manager.
Mm-hmm.
Was across my academy in Beverly Hills, but he live in Santa Barbara. He trained his teacher there named Franjinha.
Jiu-Jitsu.
Jiu-Jitsu. He was a purple belt at the time.
Oh, wow. Yeah. In 2021, mental health is finally a thing. That's why we're excited to be sponsored by BetterHelp. If you're struggling right now and not really feeling like yourself, it might be because it has not been a good year. It's been pretty rough for most of us. Most of, really, like me, you, everybody. So listen, you're not alone. If you're having a hard time, therapy helps. And it doesn't have to be the cliche, how does that make you feel kind of therapy. It can be whatever you want it to be. You can privately talk to somebody if you feel like you're not dealing well with stress, or you're having relationship issues, or if you're just feeling off in general. I mean, I know I was. I have my ups and downs. You're not alone. It's not exclusive to just, as they would say, regular people. Everybody gets this. So whatever you need, it's time to stop being ashamed of normal human struggles and start feeling better, because you deserve to be happy. I know I deserve to be happy, and if I deserve it, I'm kind of a scumbag. You definitely deserve it. And now you don't have to worry about finding an in-person therapist near you to help. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist. So you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. If you're feeling up to it and you want to look at somebody and talk to them, by all means do that. But if you feel like being somewhat anonymous, you're more than welcome to that as well. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can start communicating with your therapist in under 48 hours. Join the millions of people who are seeing what therapy is really about. It's always a good time to invest in yourself, because you are your greatest asset. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp and Culturally Canceled. Listeners get 10% off their first month at BetterHelp.com/Peters. That's BetterHelp.com/Peters. Hey, everybody, it's Russell Peters, and if I sound relaxed and calm and feeling good, it's because I am. You see, I've been sleeping on my Helix mattress, and everybody's unique, and Helix knows that. So they have several different mattress models to choose from. They have a soft, medium, and firm mattress. They even have mattresses great for cooling you down if you sleep hot, which I happen to do. Helix Sleep has a quiz that takes just 2 minutes to complete, and it matches your body type and sleep preferences to the perfect mattress for you. Because why would you buy a mattress made for somebody else? It doesn't make sense. I took the quiz, and I was matched with the Midnight Lux. I know it sounds like a whole thing, but it's actually pretty dope. Which happens to be their most awarded mattress, by the way. I didn't know that. You don't know what you're getting matched up with, but I was matched up with the award-winning mattress. I'm an award-winning sleeper. Anyway, I wanted something with a medium feel, and I tend to sleep on my side, and it's amazing because it's made with luxury memory foam that is specifically designed to offer pressure point relief for side sleepers. So now I don't have to wake up with sore hips and shoulders anymore. I still wake up with sore shoulders, but that's because I'm so broad-shouldered and very masculine. Just kidding. And Helix makes it really simple to find the right mattress. If you're looking for a mattress, you take the quiz, you order the mattress that you're matched to, and the mattress comes right to your door, shipped for free. You don't ever need to go to a mattress store again. It comes in a nice box, and you look at the box and go, where the hell is my mattress? And you think it's going to be like some sort of mattress pad, and you unfold that thing, and it's a full-on mattress. I was impressed with all of that. Anyway, so here's what you do. You just go to helixsleep.com/Peters. That's Helix with an X, HELIX/Peters. Take their 2-minute sleep quiz, and they'll match you to a customized mattress that'll give you the best sleep of your life. They have a 10-year warranty, and you get to try it out for 100 nights risk-free. They'll even pick it up for if you don't love it. But believe me, you will. Helix is offering up to $200 off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows. Oh, yeah, I forgot to mention, I got the 2 pillows as well. Fantastic. They're offering those 2 free pillows for our listeners at helixsleep.com/Peters. That's helixsleep.com/Peters for up to $200 off and 2 free pillows. Sleep well, my friends. What are we at, 20 minutes?
It's
doing good, guys.
Yeah, it's about what you won't talk about.
Yeah, right? It's good with the fighting and everything, but I want to talk about Michael's personal life, because you told me something a little while ago that blew my mind, and I don't know if you want to tell people this or not, but it's your personal life. But this shit freaked me out. We've been friends a long time, and just to find this out recently was like, what the good fuck, Michael? Now, I know Michael as a married man to the very beautiful Gillian White, who's an amazing woman, his, like, you know, when you see a couple and you go, oh, that's the match. That is the match, right? That is his person. Mm-hmm. I feel I found my person now as well, mm-hmm. which I'm very fortunate to say. And
congratulations.
Congratulations.
I had to find out from somebody else. Thank you.
Well, you know,
yeah.
You know, well, here's the thing. It was, I've been engaged 5 times. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've taken my shots at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And each time I know exactly why I got engaged.
Yeah.
One time I didn't get engaged. It was just kind of because, mm-hmm. And then, you know, so for whatever reasons, but I found my person. So now when I look at Michael and Gillian, I go, that's his person. And I can look at my girl and quite easily say, that's my person, because I now know what that feels like. And Hegan, he's met many persons in his life, but Michael, so I knew Michael as a married man to Gillian, and I knew his two younger daughters, the very smart kids, by the way. And they're young. They're what, 10 and 11 or something? Or?
Yeah, 12 and 13.
12 and 13. Yeah, but they're like, even when I would see them when they were like 8, 9 years old, mm-hmm. I was like, they look like they were 13 and 14 already.
Yeah, they did.
I mean, you got two big parents. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, how are your kids? And he goes, which ones? And I go, well, you only have two that I know of. I go, I know you have a son. And you go, no, I don't. I have more than one son.
You're right. Yeah, I started a little early.
Yeah. Way early, I'm imagining.
Very early. Very, very early. I have 3 grown sons.
No way. I didn't know that.
Okay. 3. How old is the oldest?
Yep. And so.
it's like, I'm not going to say your age.
Well,
we can use deductive reasoning.
Yes. Yeah. It's very, very easy. You know, so, you know, yeah. So anyway, 3 grown sons and 3, well, now a grown daughter, because the, you know, Aliyah's 19.
Wow.
She's 19.
So you got 19, 13, 12.
Yep. And so.
And then 3 guys that are way old.
Right. Yeah.
But no, I want to say, can you?
The middle one just turned 30.
The middle one.
Yes.
The middle one turned 30.
Yes.
Can I just, I got to get to this, Mike, because this is fucking incredible to me. And this, like, these are things that people don't realize.
Right,
like,
right.
Like, people know Mike's a badass. He's a martial artist. Mm. He's a great actor. He's a great friend. There's things about you that people don't know. First of all, Mike is actually a very proficient DJ. When he comes to my house,
do you know that?
Yeah, that's, he gets on my turntables and he gets busy. It's not like he's meandering his way through it. He knows what he's doing. He mixes on beat and he knows music. He's got a very good depth of knowledge of music. And it always bugs me out, because when he's playing, I'll be like, who the fuck's playing that right now? I look and I go, oh shit, that's shit I would play. Like, he plays house music, because to find people who really know house music, like the good house music, is a very rare thing, especially out here. In Toronto, we know house music because we're 8 hours away from Chicago and 8 hours away from New York, so we would get it all fresh as it was happening. And then Mike got on my turntables one night and started playing house music, and I go, who the fuck's playing that? Who knows that? And I walk over, it's Mike playing house music.
When I first saw you at the Comedy Store, he wasn't standing up. He was DJing over there. Yeah, he was DJing.
And, wow.
And this dude, for so many years, has given me so many cool points, because I will take his mixes. Every damn movie and television show I work on, I bring Russell's mixes to the makeup, and everybody's grooving, and so that, and I get all this credit. Oh my god! I'm like, you know, Russell Peters. You mean a comedian? This is him. I got to show the picture, because he's got a little cartoon of his DJ and stuff. I'm like, believe it or not, no, this is it's crazy. I know his mixes by heart now. You've probably given me 20 freaking mixes.
Yeah, I give you a lot of mixes.
Yeah.
I think one of the only people who I only share my mixes with maybe about 5 or 6 people.
He and I are very similar. We are facilitators. I get my joy out of giving, and he's the same way. I'm not used to getting. And so I'm like over the moon when someone gives me something, because I will trick you into not giving me anything. You want some more? No, I'm good. You know, I'm a giver. But like, what this guy, you know, I see he does the same thing. He makes sure his people in his orbit are taken care of, same way. And so we got to fight. It's like more so like the outdo helping each other. But like it's but yeah, it but that's something I really value a whole lot. Just that musical like knowledge. And you know, I always said, even before I found my, you know, Gillian, my, you know, other
your person,
half,
your person,
my person, I always said, the person that understands my playlist, more than likely, we will be, we connect.
That's exactly what I got.
Yeah. That's that. Isn't that a trip?
It's weird how
where
that.
This guy knows, like, people go, how the hell do you know this band and this, you know, rock band for like, this, like, what are you, a 60-year-old white lady? Like, he knows the same music from that to house to deep hip hop. Like, I couldn't stump him. It was like we knew the same thing, but there's a part of our personalities that are all of that. And that's
we're multifaceted.
Yeah,
where our minds are open to a lot of things.
Yeah,
I think that's explained by your broad spectrum of fighting techniques that you learned and mastered.
Yeah, and you know, think about his comedy. It's kind of like when I grew up. I remember when I had a 16th birthday, I had a big birthday party.
How old was your son then?
That was very clever. That was very clever. That was very clever. Well, you know.
He was born.
There you go. Now, if anybody just starts counting up, they kind of know. See, but in that 16th birthday party, I had all my friends, and there were five factions of people who just separated themselves and was like, "What the hell do you have in common with those people?" And so it's kind of like, well, with Russell, that's what he's like, because he's got such a variety of fans that from all over the world. It's like, and it's why but they are united through him, and your parties look like that too.
Yeah, I like when
your parties look like that. You
I go, like to put people together that would like, never normally be yeah. together, but then you know that they have something in common.
Yeah,
like Mike, go talk to that guy.
Yeah,
like
he'll, you know, Russell's party is like, there's a group of transvestites over there. There's some, you know, mobsters, and there's some, you know, motorcycle gang and guys, you know, all with Muppet hands, you know, and so it's
you leave
like,
Jean-Jacques out of this.
What the hell do all these people have in common? And then it's Russell, because he's a little bit of everything.
It's funny because the first time I met Russell.
He had no clue who I was, by the way, when he met me.
I didn't have no idea about...
Yeah, I met at the Rainbow Room.
Yeah, Chuck Zero. Oh, I want you to meet Russell and this and that. And he came start out to me. He said, "Boy, I have a nickname in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I trained you to be Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu." I said, "What's your nickname?" And he said, "Vaca Cagada." I start laughing. I couldn't stop laughing. I said, "Man, are you sure that's yours, your nickname?" "Yeah, they call me Vaca Cagada," which
go shit.
It's like a cow. Everywhere they go, they shit everywhere. And that was in Portuguese. It sounded like I love him right away. Yeah. We exchanged number. We're talking about the train together. The next day, I go to my brother Jean-Jacques' house. His wife came to me and said, "Higa, you have to see this stand-up comedian. He's so funny." Was Russell Peter.
Yeah.
Yeah, didn't know he's that big, because when they're watching YouTube, I have hundreds and hundreds of people in his show, like sold out. I said, "Man, this guy is amazing."
Mm.
And I remember we start talking about training, and he lived close to Jean-Jacques, right? To my brother at the time.
Yeah, I was in Malibu, and his school was in Malibu. And yeah. I didn't know that. And that's where you came and trained me the first time, was in Malibu. Yes. It was you, me, and that Mexican kid who's an actor, who was on a Disney show, I think. What was his name? Good kid. Well, he only trained that one time with you.
Diego Boneta? No.
Yeah, Diego Boneta. Yeah. Yeah, that was his name, yeah. Nice kid, too. I saw him out a couple of times.
He's doing really good.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to have any problems. So, Michael.
Yes, sir.
Can we get back to what shocks me about you? Because you're a very young looking, you're a very youthful man.
Yeah. I'll go with that.
Can I just put this out there? Because it's incredible.
You're not going to let it go anyway.
I'm not going to let it go because I don't want to have this information welling up inside me because I think it's incredible.
Yes.
Michael has 6 kids, right?
Yeah.
6 children.
That I know of.
That he knows of, mm-hmm. that he's claiming.
Yeah.
And how many grandkids?
4.
4 grandkids.
Mm-hmm.
Now go on, give us the cherry on top, Mike.
I'll say it this way. The second oldest grandkid has a 2-year-old daughter.
That to me is fucking incredible.
I will say it that way.
I know. That's amazing. Yes. That's great.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I need another term for what that is. I can't hear that.
What if you hear grandfather squared?
Yeah, like
Grandpa squared.
You know,
what does your granddaughter call you?
No, she's like, she actually just looks at me like that. Like, it's, I got pictures of her. She just does that.
But your grandkids, do they call you grandpa?
Yeah, they do. Against my wishes.
Yeah, but you are their fucking grandpa.
Yeah, it's a little weird.
Like, put it this way, if Michael was on Maury, it would be like, you are not the grandfather.
Yeah. It stopped the entire restaurant long time ago. I was at Daily Grill with my son and his wife and, you know, his
kids.
Kid, yeah. And so basically my son, basically he kind of, you see, my beard doesn't come in that you know, but my son has the Teddy Pendergrass, right?
Oh, the big deep beard.
Yeah. So, and he sports it well. And, so he looks a little older than he is.
This is your older son, oldest son.
Yes. And so
this is the 60-year-old.
His wife says, you know, innocently, you know, let the baby, you know, give the baby to his grandfather. And somebody overheard that. It seems like the whole restaurant overheard that. And it was just like
a needle.
Yeah.
What
did you say? Oh, well, that's great. Wait a minute. That's his grandfather. Like, that's his father? And like, yeah. Just like everybody, you could continue to eat, like, but it just stopped the whole restaurant because, again, that's.
Yeah, but here's the thing. You're not a deadbeat dad, so it's not like.
That's 18 years ago. No, more than that.
It has to be 18 years. More than 18.
Yeah, more than 18 years ago. So that, I looked.
Even younger.
Younger, yeah, so.
Not that you look any older than you did in the 20, 35 years, 30 years ago, you know what I mean?
Well, it's the, you know, virgin blood, basically.
You drink the blood of virgins?
The sacrifice thing, but we can get into that another time.
Yeah, well, now that Epstein Island's closed, I mean.
Mm. Yeah, well, you know.
Your sacrificial days are behind you.
You ever see me in a mirror, huh? You never saw that, huh?
Never. Yeah, there is a picture of you in my house that's getting older and you're not. Yeah.
Well, you know what it is? I mean, not to sound corny, but I will sound corny. It's about being freaking happy. Right. I was, I had a rough coming up. And I used to look a lot older than people thought I was, you know? And so there's people who think I'm Beelzebub. Because those people, when I was 15, people thought I was in my 20s.
Well, you look like a grown-ass man when you post those videos of you
in the early 80s. I used to fight against, you know, men, like heavyweight men when I was 15, right? So those people thought I was mid-20s. So those people who thought I was mid-20s then, how old do you think they think I am now?
Right.
They think I'm Satan. Because they go, wait a minute, that guy's got to be mid-60s or something. But I'm not. Yeah. I'm not.
I know.
I'm not.
So you say. According to his claims.
Yes, I'm not. Yeah.
You got to be reckless at a young age.
I honestly, there was no more effort than that time when I was 15. That's all it takes. So I think you probably have done that.
No, my lady is a couple of years younger than me.
Mm-hmm.
And she's got a 28-year-old and a 26-year-old.
Mm.
And when they're all together, people don't know that they're mother and daughter. Yeah. They think that's just a bunch of friends hanging out.
Honestly, there's a lot more effort on her part than it was for my part. Damn, it's really a whole lot more effort.
What do you mean?
they have to give birth.
No doubt.
Basically, I just need, you know.
Yeah, somebody said, I can't believe a guy comes so quick, and he goes, well, it takes you 9 months to push out a baby. It takes me 9 seconds, you know. I'm glad we talked about this.
Yeah, those we need those little awkward moments. Of
those are my favorite.
Yes.
Because I know you as my friend first. Mm-hmm. I'm a fan of your work, and not just because you're my friend, but I mean, Black Dynamite is always going to be in my top five films of all time.
Oh, wow.
And that is up there with Airplane and Midnight Run and Goodfellas and Casino. So
wow, man,
it's in my top five. It's not number five. It's in my top five.
Wow, man, hey, that's high praise, bro.
I fucking love that movie, and I always advise anybody. You never saw Black Dynamite? No, I never heard of it. Well, you need to watch it because you watched it. You probably missed a lot of the jokes though, because you know, Hegan.
Started with R. So
yeah, it was a hard film for him. He spells hard with an R though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's Rard, actually. Yeah.
I'm surprised I don't get called Hustle by my Brazilian friends.
That wouldn't be too bad, really.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good name to have. Yeah. How come you've never called me Hustle?
Hustle P.
Hustle. Yeah, that's your name in Portuguese.
Yeah. Right.
Hustle.
It's kind of like two H's. The Hustle. They kind of lean into this.
Because when they say sound. Carlos, they don't say Carlos. It's Carlos.
Yeah. It's a little bit of a.
It's like.
No, we do like a scratch, like when you. We say, example, car over here in Brazil is two R's in O, like C-A-R-R-O.
So it's like Spanish, but with an extra R, but then the R's aren't pronounced.
Yeah, but the way we do, we stretch the R like carro.
Mm. I've had a few carros in my life.
Carro. In base, that's how you say Regan, Rickson.
Do you know he voiced the
oh yeah, I remember that.
He Never Back Down 3, that big guy I fight.
I bought that movie.
He was the voice of it.
Oh, really?
He was the voice of that character.
Hilarious.
Yeah, that guy's Australian.
Hilarious.
That's the one
where you were in jail and then you came.
No.
There's
no,
a giant guy.
No, like, no. It's
that's the one where you fought him like in an arena, but not in the arena, in the hallway to the arena.
Yeah, Nate Jones. Jones?
He was a big son of a bitch, that guy.
Dude, man, there's a picture of me next to him. I look like Kevin Hart.
Yeah.
That was like 7'2".
Regardless, you look like Kevin Hart.
He
but
is the strongest. He was like, I tried to arm bar him, and I had to be like, yo, man, let me freaking arm bar you. It's a movie.
Was he a fighter, too?
No, he's just one of the. He was one of the strongest men in the world.
Oh, yeah. That'll do it.
Yeah. I mean, at that height, that he had like.
What is he, 6'8"?
No, he's like close to 7 feet. Like, he's like. Just about 7 feet. Like, he had like the
you're what,
deadlift
6'2"?
Working. Yeah, yeah. Deadlift record, bench press record, and military press with arms that long. So.
Well, his arms got that long from lifting all the damn heavy weights.
No, actually, that'll make your arm shorter.
Really?
I thought
it would stretch your arms out.
Everything. That's why I thought that's because their
muscles pulled them up, but I mean.
Well, when you're like this and you're short, right? You do a bench press, it's like, you're done. That guy's like, so that is unusually, true story.
Plane. Hold on, my flight's coming.
He's got a runway down here. So the true story, that dude, when we were rehearsing, Nathan, he kind of would go off on tangents and he'd start telling us a story about when he was a bodyguard. And one tactic he had to keep his client safe is that he lifted the client away from the guys who were trying to attack him. And while he was telling the story, he used me. And he picked me up and kept explaining the story.
How did he lift
Nobody, you? Under my arms like I was 5. And he held me up while he continued the story. Nobody was listening to him because everybody was like, and I'm like, do you see this? The guy's like, sure, I kept him away. I was like, I can't do that to my daughter. You know, I mean, it was unusual. That kind of strength was just frightening.
That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, if he could fight, it'd be even more dangerous.
Mm.
Do you need to know how to fight when you're that strong, though, do you? You're that strong. You're that physically large. First of all, nobody's going to take a shot at you.
Well, you got to jump up to hit the dude.
Yeah. I mean, like basketball players are a completely different animal because they're tall and thin and 9 times out of 10 don't know how to fight.
Yeah, they fight really bad.
Oh, my God. I get embarrassed when I watch basketball fights.
I just laugh. And it's like just kind of watching certain folks dance.
Yeah, it's like slap. It's like these, oh, it's horrible. Mm-hmm. I get so frustrated with it.
Yeah, I'm like, come on, man. Like,
and football fights, I got so much equipment on, it doesn't really make a difference.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's the snatching the face mask thing.
That shit irritates me.
Yeah.
Ooh, tough guy.
Yeah.
There are some tough guys in it. Let's not get it twisted, you know.
Oh, of course. You got to be tough to play football.
Yeah, I guess.
No, you got. Come on now.
Listen, I always liken it to Australian rules football.
Well,
that shit is insane where they're stepping on each other's head and stuff with no equipment on.
I couldn't have done it. No. I had the wrong attitude.
Yeah, we're too fight competitive.
Yeah, that's why I don't play basketball now.
You're like me.
Growing up, you
get frustrated. I'm the same. I would hit a guy. Bop. I don't want. Fuck
well, because
you.
Because they would grab a rebound and elbow you. I'm like, that's my arena. You just elbowed me. If I looked up basketball, elbowing is not part of it. Well, I'll give you one back. And I used to think that, like, what was happening? I realized late, real late, that it was me. Because I remember being out here at watching basketball game and, you know, in Marina, you know, out there. And so I watched people, like, get in an argument and was like, yeah, well, fuck you, all that type of stuff, right?
A lot of barking.
And then I'm like, oh, he's about to hit him. Then they run down the other side. And it was like all good. Like, and he's still checking the guy. I'm like, how do you do that? The guy who just got in your face, who elbowed you, is checking. How would you not hit him back? And so I realized, oh, all the while, that was just me.
No. That's a fighter's mentality. Because you and I both don't like sports you can play. Mm. You cannot play fight sports.
Yeah.
And now, Hegan, you're Brazilian. I would have imagined, I don't know this to be true or false, but I would imagine you would have played soccer growing up.
No, actually, the sports I did water polo. which is weird. Yeah, I did some sport called handball.
Yeah, it's not a,
it's like a basketball.
We just imagined him playing water polo. That's a mistake. Soccer. He didn't look like that when he was playing water polo. So get that out of your mind right now.
Well, no, it's not that. I mean, it's not. It's the one sport you don't expect the guy who's a legendary jiu-jitsu guy to play. I played water polo.
But he's 13. You go, okay. But when you go water polo and you see what we see as Higgin.
But he was also training already at 13, I would imagine.
I know, but you just, did you not picture him playing
this,
water polo?
Yeah, I picked him like an adult.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
Well, there's that, and there's also the fact that he was in Brazil. Soccer is the number one sport there, isn't it?
Or football. Do they call it soccer?
What do you guys call it?
No, I play soccer, football, in Brazil, but I was never like Jean-Jacques or Carlos.
Well, Jean-Jacques was good?
Jean-Jacques was really good. Jean-Jacques was in a level he can play in a club.
Mm.
He was one of the best. Jean-Jacques have this ability. Whatever he do sport-wise, he always have bring to the next level.
So Carlos was good too? Your brother Carlos?
Carlos was really good.
Your brother Carlos?
Yeah.
I've trained with him as well.
Carlos,
he's incredible.
In Jean-Jacques, a fantastic soccer player.
Didn't Carlos just get his red belt?
No, he got his...
The candy cane. Red and white.
Red and white.
Yeah. What's after red and white? Red?
Yes.
And then that's it?
That's it.
That's crazy. Mm-hmm. How many red belts are there active today?
Maybe 6.
Do you know who they are?
I know a little bit, some. Yeah.
Who are they?
Because they... Most die. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I would imagine so.
Like almost 80s. You know what I mean? 85.
Isn't that a requirement of the red belt?
To die?
To be a red belt, have to be like in your 70s to 80s.
Is Horian a red belt?
Yeah.
Red, right? Not candy cane.
Horian's red.
Hickson's a candy cane, but he doesn't wear it.
They want to give to Hickson early.
The red belt.
Yeah, but Hickson, I never seen him use a red belt.
He still uses his coral belt.
Yeah,
that is jiu-jitsu to me. That is the one style that has maintained tradition. Like the apps. That's what karate used to be like.
Right.
It wasn't a business. They didn't care how long you were training. You don't get a black belt until you earn it.
Right.
And so the worst thing that happened with karate, it became a business, and they watered it down.
Yeah.
And so there's, you know,
I like when I meet people and they're like, oh, my son's a black belt in karate. I go,
yeah, he's 12.
That's fucking great, buddy. I'm sure he's very effective.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But,
it's like,
yeah, but back in the day,
here,
it was like that. And in the tradition that, you know, people didn't even, you know, desire rank like that. It's like the other people had to promote you to that. You know, yeah, you didn't promote yourself.
That's the thing with jiu-jitsu. People are like, what are you? I'm like, I'm a blue belt with four stripes. To go after 5 years, ago, you don't just get it. You got to earn that. So yeah, they're not going to give it to you until you know it.
See, back in the 70s, a black belt meant that. Right. Nobody was handed out a black belt. If you were a black belt, see, that's the thing. And it's people keep thinking about the old tradition. And they say, oh, so-and-so is a black belt. Oh, he's a black belt. It's not what it means anymore.
Right.
You know, because most black belts, I'm like, whatever. It means
a black
nothing
belt usually is like a, and karate is usually like a high level green belt or some shit.
Not, you know, even. No, it's because they wouldn't even be able to compete with green belts, or a green belt from in the 70s is way beyond a black belt nowadays.
Right.
Because just think about it. If I train my knuckles to break objects, right? I'm hitting you. You're hitting, I'm learning, I can withstand somebody who can break my ribs, who is hitting me barefisted and is trying to, you know, really crack me, right? So you know how many people will quit because they can't deal with that? Well, guess what? In the 90s or whatever, everybody wore gloves.
Yeah.
So everyone could withstand that now. So just, you've never dealt with that kind of pain and had to overcome it, of somebody hitting you so hard that you would normally quit, or you feel like you're going to quit, but then you go, so now everybody can pass. You know what I mean? So it's lovely to see that jiu-jitsu has not done that. It would be a tragedy.
I'm sure there's schools where you can get an easy come up easier. But when why I train with the Machados or the Gracies when I've had an opportunity.
There's so much of, see, even back in the 70s, there's probably schools that were lighter, but they didn't survive.
Right.
You couldn't compete against the traditional people.
Right, exactly.
So that's the thing. It's sad, but there's probably going to be a day where people are going to keep watering it down,
yep,
because somebody's going to give a black belt to their students because they paid them a bunch of money.
Yeah, they don't want to lose that student.
Right. And somebody starts getting super rich from teaching a watered down jiu-jitsu, and then it influences other jiu-jitsu masters to go that way. And just, oh, I got 5,000 students and I'm making all this money and all this stuff. And then that's what happens. That's what happened to karate. You start getting mega karate schools. And so it become like, you know, summer camp. And you know, the instructors, they're bowed down to, and they're going, hey, man, I've busted my ass my whole life. Well, hey, I'm going to sit back and get paid.
Yep.
Eventually, that will probably happen with jiu-jitsu.
It's happening right now.
Yeah, yeah.
I've watched a lot of YouTube stuff with like fake black belts who, and then they get like a real jiu-jitsu guy to go in the school and storm the school and be like, you didn't fucking earn this. You can't give yourself a black belt.
Yeah.
And then they want to fight the guy and the guy doesn't want to fight him. And you're like, you need to fight him. If you say you're a black belt and some guy comes to your school, you're going to have to fight him and prove that you're a black belt.
But think about this. Imagine somebody who has a good reputation in jiu-jitsu. And that person just goes, screw it. I just want thousands of students. And he will sell his good reputation and get all these people. So because that guy is legitimate, he will get a lot of money and a lot of influence because he's legitimate. And then other people who are legitimate, it coaxes them. It, you know, makes them start doing that. Because I've seen it happen with karate, where good, you know, they you know, like I say, they get to the point where they go, why can't I get paid?
I agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
I think you have today two types of belt. One you can buy, one you can, they give you because he want to keep you at the academy. You have the old generation, which they value the blood, the sweat, and the honor.
That's right.
And sometimes I tell some of the guys, you can choose. You can go to an academy, which they will give you the belt in the next 4 years.
Higa Machado.
My pleasure to be here.
Michael Jai White, my friends, Higan and Michael. I want to thank you guys for coming in today on Culturally Canceled. That's what I called it because...
Culturally canceled.
Because...
I couldn't even say it. Culturally canceled.
Because we live in the time of cancel culture.
True.
And my material, my act, my way of thinking is perfectly in line with what would be canceled. And I'm like...
It's going to swing. The pendulum is going to swing back the...
I'm not worried about it because...
I'm sure it will.
Because people don't focus on intent. We need to focus on intent, not the word. Mm-hmm. The words don't mean shit.
Mm-hmm.
The words aren't the words that are going to hurt you. It's the intent.
But if an asshole is deciphering that, there you go.
Yeah, but I also say the people that are trying to cancel you were never the people that were in your corner to begin with.
True.
But, so don't worry about the people that don't like you. Worry about the people that love you.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
I would second that.
And I'm looking forward. Now, also, I want to talk about this really quick before we go.
Mm-hmm.
We have when is our movie coming out, Mike?
Well, it should be coming out. It's definitely coming out this year.
2021.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And you know the movie is loosely based on, well, it is based on Black Wall Street, Tulsa.
Right.
You know about that?
In Oklahoma, that's where, in the 40s, the 30s?
20s. This is the 100th anniversary.
Right.
This year.
Right.
It happened in 1921. Black Wall Street, thriving black community in Tulsa.
On their own, without any help of anybody.
Right, you know, and it was like a domestic, like, terrorist, like they just destroyed this whole community. This story of where the movie occurs is like the beginning of that town. So it's the timing is right because it's the 100th anniversary, and there's going to be a lot of things. There's a HBO series that's going to be talking about Black Wall Street, this movie is kind of highlighting that. So our movie is looking good, and I don't fall in love with my own stuff.
You better. Some of it's really good.
I'll always be my own worst critic.
I said some of it. I mean,
but this, I'm really feeling where we're at with this movie.
The Outlaw Johnny Black.
Yes, sir.
The three of us are in this movie. Michael wrote and directed it, and Higan is in it, and I'm in it, and we have an interesting relationship, Higan and myself, in this movie.
Absolutely.
I like that.
Yes, me too.
I love it.
Me Higan too. Machado, what's your Instagram?
Higan Machado.
Not with the I. Cut the I.
It's at RIGANMACHADO. And now here's the funny thing. Every time I post something that says Machado on it, I get people in India laughing because they're like, ah, motherfucker. And I'm like, what? They go, yeah, macho. I mean, that means motherfucker. And I'm like, oh, wow.
It does?
Yeah, yeah.
It does? Oh, okay.
Yeah. How do you know that?
And Michael Jai White. What is your Instagram?
Jai Michael White.
Jai Michael White.
Wait a minute. Instagram? No, it's. Oh, God damn.
Do you want me to pull it up? Because follow it.
Official Michael Jai.
Official Michael Jai.
And in Indian, Jai means victory.
Yeah, Jai Ho.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was a ho. So this is great to know.
Former ho.
Former ho. Until you find your person.
Exactly.
You slut around as much as you can.
Yes.
But and then people think, oh, he's a womanizer. No, no. We're looking for something.
Exactly. And it's a numbers game.
Yeah. I mean, it's like fishing. You know, they say plenty of fish in the sea.
Hey, I looked out. I reconnected with my soulmate.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I was a whore or a hoe, back 25 years ago, we were together and lost contact.
What did break you up the first time? May I get all up in your business?
Just because I just was running around.
Okay, that's fair.
I mean,
you met the right person at the wrong time.
Yeah, and I didn't apply myself.
Right.
I didn't apply myself.
I didn't find
out who we were. Because it would have been over back then. It would have just been like...
Yeah, you would have ruined the whole thing.
No, 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 no. I would have been like, I would have married her 25 years ago.
But you would have slutted around
no,
still.
No. I was honestly slutting around to find the one.
Right, when you didn't realize you had the one.
Yes, I didn't. Yeah, right. I didn't find out I had the one.
Yeah, you need to know. You need to lose in order to know what a victory feels like.
This is true. That was profound. That
I'm
was
very like, profound, guys.
We should end on something.
We're
like
going
that.
To definitely end on that. Yeah. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Hegan.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Courtney, our wonderful producer. And Eddie, thanks for all your Googling prowess on El Google, the Mexican Google. Russell Peters on Culturally Canceled. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode of Culturally Canceled. If you want to see me live anywhere, you can go check out russellpeters.com and see where I'm at. If you don't want to see me or talk to me, just listen to me on my podcast. I'll be here. You'll be here. I won't know you're here, but I'm hoping you're here. Anyway, check me out.